the Simple Options Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organizations, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening, Bobby and David. All right, I will read the first paragraph on page 96, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So step 12 is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And then from page 96, suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and he says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Next first. Rock, paper, scissors.
Oh. I won. You go.
My name is Bobby Bencourt. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Bobby.
And it's a pleasure to be here. It's a privilege to be here, actually. And this is one of my favorite paragraphs in working with others, as far as the big book is concerned. I'd like to preface this with, if it weren't for me hitting an absolute bottom and being completely convinced that I could not fix the problem, which I found was contained in his book, that I probably still wouldn't be alive. So it's a paradox in AA when we talk about the 12th step, that in order to keep my sobriety, in order to maintain that, I actually have to give it away. And by doing so, I stay sober. And I love the approach here that we're talking about. It is pretty practical, in my opinion. And this always reminds me about how I was, my actually direct experience with coming into AA and actually getting sober the last time. You're making your second visit to a man. So I'm assuming at this point I've asked him if he's an alcoholic and he understands his condition. He's identified with the fact that he's screwed and there's absolutely nothing he can do about his life, sober or drunk. And that was my experience. And after I tell him the good news of how screwed he really is, and then he realizes how screwed he is, I go, "You're even more screwed." And so hopefully he's pretty desperate because I was. And my first sponsor, one of the guys that I recognize as someone who's helped me out more than anybody in my entire sobriety, told me that I should stick with the black part and I should read this book. And he was sold on these ideas and why that was so important, because when I heard people talk in AA, I didn't know what that was. When I saw people walk the walk in AA, I didn't know what that was. It was just absolutely foreign to me. And he would say things and it made absolute sense to me, and I wondered how he knew that. And my life looked like a giant turd. And I have to say that because really for me to take directions from another human being, it had to get really bad. And so when he told me to read this book, I remember one of the things, the conversations we had is that, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Call me every day and read this book." And I was like, "Every day? Like, is there a parenthesis around that? Like every day, like you mean literally every day? I don't call my old lady every day. I'm a side chick, nobody. I don't call anybody every day. I don't call my parents unless I need money every day, you know. This is very foreign to me, and you actually want me to follow through with something." And he said, "Read first 57 pages to start off with." And I believe that one of the reasons that he did that with me, and I do the same thing today, I mean, I sponsor people very similar, is that he wanted to see if I was going to do what I said I was going to do, if I was actually willing to work the program. And so I think he pretty much figured out if I would call him for a week straight, and someone like me who's completely incapable of doing anything about the problem that lies before me, who is actually shows willingness to do that and read the pages, then he might give me the time and actually work with me. And reading the book was one of the most helpful things that I ever did besides drink and try to kill myself. Those other things were very helpful in me getting sober. And reading the book actually kind of spelled it out for me. And I like how it says this is only my second approach, because I think the message here is not really what I see, what my experience is. It's my experience based on what the book actually tells me. And that's how kind of I got hooked, because when I heard the big book actually being talked about, my sponsor never told me pages 46 through this means, you know, I don't have God and I'm screwed. He would say things and it just put everything into context, and I'd go, "That's my life." And every single time he would say something, it was just another bulb that was going off in my head. That's also my life. Yes, I'm also screwed. Yes, everyone hates me. Yes, I drink no matter what. And there was this inconsistencies after inconsistencies. And hearing that and then actually reading it myself, I was like, aha, so he does know what he's talking about. It's actually in a book. reading this, actually, it's like buying a car. One of my favorite speakers talk about buying a car. And he says, you got to read the contract. And, you know, I hate buying a car and figuring out there was just a sale and it was just $5,000 less a month ago. And the guy says, you should have read the contract. And AA is kind of like that. If you get in a jam and you're in trouble and you're in AA and you've agreed to go to any lengths, then you should have read the contract. Because there was no mystery for me at what this deal was about. I pretty much knew what the problem was after reading the book. I didn't like it. You know, no one asked me though, so there was also a problem. But it kind of, hey, this is what's entailed here. This is what we're going to do. This is not where your opinion is. This is not dissect this intellectually. This is what we're going to do. It's a program of action. I like this part here. It says, having had the experience yourself, having the experience of what? And my sponsor always pointed out to me, having had the experience of going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's why we're on page 96 and you're making your second approach, because you've had the experience of being in his shoes and what was told for you to do. And you can give him much practical advice. I could give you relationship advice. I'm not sure if he'd want that, though. I can give you other advice. It has nothing to do with anything. I'm not sure if that's going to do you any good getting sober. but I can give you some information about what I've done to stay sober, based on the book. Let him know if you're available, if he wishes to make a decision and tells his story. I mean, that's a third and a fourth and a fifth, basically. But do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult with someone else, because I don't want to spoil my opportunity. And that's basically, you know, what I got out of that. I got to tell you, if I didn't know that a shadow of a doubt that, you know, my first sponsor used to, when I would complain and I'd say, oh, my mom did this in the Navy. And he's like, well, you've kind of been an asshole to your mom your entire life. And you were trying to basically sell coke in the Navy. You should have been discharged a long time ago. Just as a reality check, I don't even know how you made it this long. You know, you're an animal. And I would look at him and I'd go, well, this is also true. This is also true. He's coming from a place of perspective that I do not have. And if I didn't understand that he was actually trying to help me, and it was based on the idea of this is what you're going to deal with here, then I don't think I would have stayed. Because the amount of understanding and compassion that was shown to me, even though I was not a very nice person, it's hard for me to even wrap my head around it. You know, for me to come in here and think about what I was like in day one, and people used to go out in public with me, you know, that was very difficult. That was a very difficult feat. But I like how it's just getting straight into the point here. Let him know you're available if he wishes. I'm not going to push you. You know, you can drink or do this. I mean, that's what was told to me. Good luck. But if you are interested in getting sober, then I'm here. If you're not, if you want to figure it out, you can't seem to bring yourself to do this, I'm sorry. You know, I know what that's like. And eventually, hopefully one day, like me, you'll be back in the same situation where you have another opportunity to come into AA. One other thing here. I like that there's no opinions here. I think it says he's prepared to go through the 12 steps. It's not when I tell him to. It says when he's prepared. It's not shut up and I'm going to do your thinking for you and no sex for a year. I'm going to be your relationship and expert advice. No pets. Maybe you can have a plant for a year. No cursing. No this. Go lose some weight. You need some yoga and some gym exercise in your life. It just says if you're prepared to go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what's crazy is that all those things I talked about, which I was trying to figure out here, my sponsor knew that if I got tapped into that, a lot of the things that are going on in my life would actually fix themselves anyway. That's all I have.
Thanks, Bobby. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
David.
I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's October 24th, 1989. I was 28 years old when I got sober. I was 56 years old because of you people and good sponsorship and 12 steps. I got to be 56 years old. So I wasn't an old man when I got here, but I think I got to be an old man because of you people. I didn't walk into AA and get sober on the first day. I describe myself as a reluctant member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here when I was 22 years old. I believe I qualified for AA by the time I was about 14, 15 years old. I've got that thing. Once I start drinking, the only thing I can tell you for sure is I'm gonna keep drinking. I didn't know that if I put alcohol in my body, that I was lighting something off that was gonna burn until it was done. Not when I said it was done. I thought I had power and control. And when I got here at 22 and you explained those things to me, you know, once you start, you can't stop. And when you stop, you can't stay stopped because you're carrying around a defective mind that's going to talk you into a drink every time. And the third thing they told me was, and you can't do anything about that by yourself. You're going to need some help. And I'm one of the people that said, thanks for the information. And I left. And I got an aquarium habit. I thought I needed a hobby. The gym. Gym's a good one. Diet program. Psychiatrist. New girlfriend. The good thing about girlfriends and psychiatrists and gym memberships is when they don't work, you can get another girlfriend and you can get another gym membership and you can get another. So you can keep cycling it through as long as you... Anyway, I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 years not wanting those basic things to be true, that I really have no power over this thing. You know, like Bobby was talking about, the fact is... I'm hopeless. It's not up to me whether I drink or not. That's a very hard pill for a guy like me to swallow. So essentially what ended up happening to me was I ended up, the other thing that made me not an alcoholic was I didn't have any trouble quitting. I quit 1,000 times. I quit for a year on my own once. 6 months over here, a few months over there, a few weeks over here, a few hours over here. So I would quit. And I would tell that to you people at the meeting after the meeting. You know, I can quit. I quit all the time. They say, yeah, but can you stay stopped? Well, you know, define stay stopped, you know. I'm just a kid. How much time you want out of me? But I couldn't accept the idea that I needed help, that I was powerless over this thing. So today, I have a sobriety day. This is my home group. I'm a member of the Simple Actions group. We had a very very peaceful and facilitative business meeting tonight. That was a lot of fun. I have a sponsor today. My sponsor is aware that he sponsors me. And I work with a lot of men in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have the absolute privilege of being able to help people go through the steps. So it took me a long time to just accept that I needed to do these 12 steps. You know, nobody handed me a book and said, hey, read this and come back and tell me when you're prepared to work the steps, you know, then we'll take the next step. You guys told me your stories. You guys worked with me. You guys offered me a hand. You offered me fellowship. You offered me the truth, you know, as well, which I was not ready to pick up on quickly. So I lost a page. Where are we? Okay. So, everything, I'll just ditto what Bobby said. Are you prepared to go through the 12 steps? I mean, what does that look like today? When I'm working with somebody today, you know, we've talked for a little while. I've checked you out. What happens when you take a drink? Do you think you're an alcoholic? Oh, I know I'm an alcoholic. How do you know you're an alcoholic? I don't think I'm an alcoholic. Well, what happens after you take that first drink? If you take that first drink, are you going to have a second one? The 9 out of 10 response in these rooms is, if I take that first drink, it's on, bro. You know, it's gonna go. Well, that sounds like alcoholism. So, if you want to do this, all I know is, I really think, okay, I'm going to say one thing and then I'm just going to shut up. I think at the end of the day, there's two things that Alcoholics Anonymous offers. One of them is a practical program of action through these 12 steps, which will change your whole life. And the other one is a group of people that will go with you every step of the way. Everything else, I think, is something else. And I'm up for something else. But if we're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, those are the things. So am I prepared to go through the 12 steps? And I just try to make that very clear with the guys that I work with. It's like, my job is to help you work through these 12 steps. That's why I'm here. That's what I intend to offer. You want to get on with that? Let's get on with that. And I tell people, you pedal, I'll help you steer. I'm like Bobby. I'm not going to chase anybody. I'm not going to run after you. You know, if you want this thing, then I will help you. I promise you, you will not have an unreturned phone call, you know, or an appointment not met. I will meet your level of enthusiasm. You want to do this thing? I will meet you. So, but that's what we're here to do. We're here to do the steps. I'm not here to be your buddy. I will say, having said that I have never gone through the 12 steps with someone else and helped them go through all these things and watch their lives absolutely change and not develop a friendship and affection and love and respect for those people. So we sort of end up friends, but we're not, I don't know, we're not dating, you know? We're trying to get through this practical program of action together. And the only thing that I have to offer is my own experience. You know, no advice. I love what Bobby said too. I tell the guys that I work with, if I ever give you romantic or financial advice, I want you to shoot me in the face. Because nobody's messed that stuff up worse than I have. I'm sure some people have, but you know, I can't say. I have to say I've messed that up more than anyone else. So you want to do the steps? I'll go with you. Let's get on with it. Thanks.
Moving over to page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on the service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house.
Bobby?
Yeah, I use that actually in my life quite a bit, other than outside of working with others. It's not a matter of giving, it isn't question, but when and how. When and how to give. You know, I also, I came into AA twice. I came around AA once, let's put it that way. And then I came into AA. My mom really meant well, she did. But she didn't realize what she was really up against. I think in a vague way after she changed the lock, she did. But she tried to get me help at one point. You know, and this also has to do with other people trying to help me in my life and, people in AA trying to help me reach out. But it was just not the right time, man. I was just not ready. It makes the big difference between failure and success. You know, basically, I remember... It was Father's Day. It was Father's Day. It was 2002. And my dad found me, and I was probably about a fifth of vodka in, God knows how much weed, and probably a script of Laura Tabs wandering around the front yard. And I was looking for beer. And he asked me, "What am I doing?" And I said, "What are you doing? You know, well, you're not looking for my beer for me." And he just looked at me like I had two heads. And I was in this shed that was attached to the house. And I had actually woke him up. And I think he was probably going to shoot me if he didn't realize it was his own son. But he came outside and I was trapped inside this little shed there. And what I had done was in a drunken stupor, I fell over these bicycles and then knocked down all these paint cans. And it was just like, sounded like a gunshot went off in there. And he comes running out. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. He was like, "What are you doing?" And again, I asked him, "What are you doing? Help me up." He's going to stand there and look at me. I'm drunk. Get me out of here. And he didn't find that very humorous. And I was even mad that he found the beer and then took it away from me. And I was very resentful about this. It was at the top. It was like the first thing when I woke up in my drunken stupor, I was still mad at the fact that he took my beer away from me. It's not his. How could you do that? Anyway. This led to him having an intervention on Father's Day with my mom, who was he was split up with, and they hated each other, but they, you know, at that point were trying to deal with me. And they said, "You know, you need help." And I said, "Like hell I do. You need help. Bunch of drunken fools trying to raise me." And he said, "Well, you can go to treatment or you're going to go in the street." And I was like, "I need help. I need help. I need it quick and I need it fast." You know, and I'd like to say that started my journey into recovery, but it did not. And just as that was insincere, so was everything else that went along with it. And I remember that. You know, it's a fond memory of mine, actually, thinking how much they tried to give for me and how much it didn't work. And when someone is not ready, they're just not ready, you know. And I meet all kinds of people. You know, I was actually talking to somebody earlier this week, and he said, "I know this guy needs it." And I told him, "I know that you need it." What does that mean? You know, we're on the phone together. You're on the phone with him? No, he hasn't returned my calls. Well then, looks like you're making another phone call. Because you ain't got nobody to work with. Because if he ain't calling you, then you ain't working with him. You know, so I'm not here to pressure you. I'm not here to preach to you. No access to grind and all that good stuff. The minute we work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. You know, some people may not like my approach, you know, some of the people I've helped. But I don't care where you live. I'm not picking you up most of the time. Unless there's some kind of situation that arises that you literally can't make it there. But, you know, I've sponsored people in Newport News, and I found out there's a bus system in Newport News. Did you know that? And they would make it all the way over here, and I would drive them back. But I'm not a taxi. And, you know, I've had plenty of experience with that, you know, finding my way. If you really want to get to a meeting, and you'll make it to a meeting a lot of times. And See, he clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us had very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, I had no job. Wife or no wife, I didn't have a wife to lose. I did have an ex-stripper girlfriend that I lost, though. That was very important to me. Simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And I believe that, I'm going to try not to use profanity while I'm up here because it's being recorded. I feel like I just had to have the, I don't know how to say that without saying it. I had to be beat down so bad that there was absolutely no options. There was no dependence upon anything else. There was no plan B. There was nothing. It was like everything I owned in a sea bag, and that's what I brought to AA. I met some broad in rehab and decided she's got a place, so I'm going to sleep with her and then ask my sponsor in rehab for a job, and this is going to work out great. And it did not. To my surprise, my plans failed me yet again. And what I learned is that regardless of those material things, I have to do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. That being said, I can't tell you why all those things were provided for me when I got here. Seriously. You know, I it's a joke, but really, I have no idea. I was 28 days into SARP. My family didn't want me back home. My dad was barely even, he disowned me before I went into my last rehab and said, I got nothing for you, buddy. Good luck. My mom said, probably not a good idea that you come here since all of your friends are criminals. So try and figure that out. I didn't have a job. I had absolutely nothing saved. My car was repossessed. The Navy said, get out after 28 days of treatment. You're no longer our problem. When we don't care, we can't get rid of you fast enough. I had no friends. And I came into AA and got sober. And that was very uncomfortable. It was like having my skin torn off. But it was better than what I was doing prior to that. I gotta tell you, it was better than doing what I was doing. And I had absolutely nothing. I was so broke, it wasn't even funny. You know, it was some of the most leveling of the pride moments I've ever had in my life. And I think about that because I stayed sober. I did what was necessary that was very uncomfortable for me not to be able to do lots of things because of my decisions that I had placed. My family didn't want anything to do with me because I'd burned bridges. The military or any other prospects for a career were down the tube because I burned bridges. I didn't have any friends because I burned bridges. I used people up. And once I realized that even without any of those things operating in my life, that I can still get sober, then I got sober. I don't know. It was crazy. I never want to forget how my dependence at that point, there's never a time where I've ever been that willing to do anything, even today. I go through stuff in my life and it sucks sometimes, and there's growing experiences, as I like to call them, but never have I had to feel like I did when I first came into AA. Absolutely just done. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nowhere to go. And yet, with that defeat and realization that my reliance has to be on something else and on this program, is also relief in that. So I like this part here. It says, not just tell your guy, burn the idea. That's pretty strong language. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he will get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. You know, I want to tell you that my sponsor never promised me that I'd have a nice car. He never promised me if I'd have a pretty girlfriend or if I'd have a good job making thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars or anything. He never promised me anything. None of it. He did tell me he had a way out that was infinitely better than mine. And just based on that information and listening to what he had going on in his life, that was enough for me. I really just, you know, one of my favorite things I talked about, I used to hate this guy's gut sometimes. He'd say, you want what we have? And I'd be all defiant. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. He's like, you want what you have? And I'd say, touche, touche. I do not want what I have. So I do want what you have. It's a process of elimination. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here, is that I have to come to the realization that no matter what condition I come in here in, I can get sober, and so can anyone else. And so if I'm working with someone, why would I change what happened to me? Why would I make anything different? If it worked for me and it's worked for hundreds, thousands of people in the same approach, then why would I try anything else? Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, it the old timers used to say nobody gets to AA on a winning streak, you know. Nobody finishes pruning their rose bushes on a sunny morning and says, gee, I think I'll improve my life in Alcoholics Anonymous today. We get here, you know, busted and disgusted and life burnt to the ground, you know, and I think about how, I don't know, self-destructive or egomaniac or whatever, just how self-reliant I am, how many mornings I come to, this has got to change, man, I can't keep living this way, this is just, I'm dying, something's got to happen different, I got to change. And then I come to AA and you give me a whole half a dozen things to change, I'm like, eh. I don't want to change that much, you know. But he clamors for this or that, you know. I'm used to ripping and running, conning, manipulating, lying, cheating, phoning it in, you know, working around. I don't know about anybody else. Is anybody else capable of being angry with someone when they don't believe a perfectly well-constructed lie that you've just delivered? Okay, yeah. I'm thinking, why are you mad? Why are you it's plausible, you know. So I'm used to living that way. I'm used to working around it, cutting a deal, getting sideways, you know, keeping that job, keeping that girl, keeping everything moving all the time. My mind's just working about that all the time. Then we end up here, and you're telling me about 12 steps. And I'm like, I don't need 12 steps. I need $50,000 and an attorney. They're like, yeah, we don't know about your legal stuff. We don't know about your, she may come back, she may not come back. We don't know. Why don't you come do these steps? It just sounds like Chinese to a guy like me. I'm like, you're not listening. You're not listening to my problem. So think about two sponsors that absolutely saved my life. The one, I burnt my life to the ground sober one more time and without a drink. And no sponsor, no home group, no spiritual life whatsoever. I know what it's like to be suicidal and sober. On a good day, you're homicidal, if you have some self-esteem. And I'm interviewing this guy to be my sponsor, because it's tough to find a guy to sponsor a genius like me. But I got this guy in mind, and I'm giving him my tale of woe. I'm giving him the background information, you know. Here's the deal with me. Here's all the subtle aspects that you need to know about me. And he just cut me off right in the middle of it. He said, yeah, man, there's nothing wrong with you but untreated alcoholism. And I was insulted. He said, listen, man, if you want to work the steps with me, we're going to work them quickly so we can get on with the business of helping other people, because that's why we're here. I'm embarrassed to tell you that I've been in AA for years before that message got to me, that that's why we're here. To help others. See, before that, you guys were all here to keep David jolly. You know, you were all here as part of my program. How do you like that? You're all just characters in my little show. And you're helping me stay sober today. Me, me, my, my. Never occurred to me that I was supposed to come here and give something to you. That I was to actively look for ways to contribute, to find you, to help you, for the purpose of helping you. My other sponsor used to always tell me no matter what I brought to him, he'd say, that's none of your business. And I would pretend like I understood what he was talking about. Like, yeah, I know. No, none of my business. And then one time he said it to me, one time too many. That's none of your business, David. And I was pissed. I was like, well, you mind telling me just what is my business? I thought I was going to stump him. And he said, yeah, your business is to trust God, clean house, help others, just for today. I was like, damn, I've heard that somewhere before. But yeah, man, we absolutely come here thinking we got legal problems, marital problems, financial problems, all that stuff. And they're big, they're real. You know, they keep you up at night. You want them gone. So I can get well regardless of anyone or anything as long as I trust God and clean house. And I'm told that the 12 steps are trust God, clean house, help others. So when I read that, I think about trust God, clean house, am I having an experience with the first 11 steps? It's already mapped out. Let's just walk it off. Thanks.
Thank you. Continuing on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
So I came into AA when I was 22 years old. I turned 20 in my second treatment facility. 2 days before I had tried to kill myself or something like that. So things were going really well. I don't have any divorce problems or separation problems. Strained relationships, I do have some experience there. Prospect has made such reparation. He came to his family and thoroughly explained the new principles by which he is living. You know, that brings to me what I was reading this morning about, you know, the 10th step of living in the world of the Spirit. What that basically means is what David said, is that I'm minding my own business. I should put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. You know, my experience is, I don't know. I'll just tell you what would happen. My family didn't want me around. There we go. I came home when I was 3 months sober without taking the steps, and my mom said, "You're the most selfish, egotistical bastard I've ever met." And I was 3 months sober, and I was like, "That's an improvement. That's an improvement." And that's what I had, literally. I mean, I wanted to go out and hang out with all my friends I used to deal drugs with. It was really cool going to meetings at the same time. Yeah, Mom, I'm coming. You know, I got to go to meetings and hang out with all my friends who might be incarcerated the next day. It was very weird because I was trying to live two different lives without being on a spiritual basis. And being sober and being around those people just didn't really work out for me. What I can tell you is that 6 months after I come home the first time, which I had no business doing anyway, honestly, but good experience for me to have to hear my mom tell me that to my face, because I'm now a grown man. I went home and I began to do things that my sponsor told me to do. He said, "You should call them." Strange. I should call them for what? Because you're their son. Even when I don't need anything? Just to say hello? Like, what's going on with them? Like, oh, okay. And so you have to understand that me being completely delusional and on the basis of running things to the ground and self-will run riot and just using people and burning them up, especially my family, was like my forte. I mean, I had a degree in that. It was bad. It was pretty bad. I didn't have a home. So to apply principles, I wrote letters and I did cards and I called. And 6 months after I had come home for nothing to hear my own voice or something, I went home to make amends. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. Yeah, so my mom was trying to raise me after my father, who had a drinking problem, convinced her that she was crazy and institutionalized herself. And he was telling her that she was crazy because she was convinced that he was cheating on her with my best friend's mom, which he was. And she found that out in the act. And so there's a lot of really good family stuff going on in my life. I'll spare you all the craziness. We have a joke in our family. We can have family reunions because no one's on parole and probation at the same time. It's a circus. And my family does not live by spiritual principles. My mom makes an effort now. But at this, when I first went home, a little bit awkward, you know. I had to eventually concede to the fact that even though all these things that I'm telling you about were relevant to me, they were very important and they were very hurtful, and I was very upset about them, they didn't really mean anything. That's a big pill to swallow. And when I went home, I didn't bring those things up. I didn't tell them what they did. I didn't tell them anything. I told them what I did. And then my world changed. My whole attitude and life began to change as a result of that. Not what you did. I was talking to David not too long ago, and he told me, as far as amends are concerned, you're done being sorry. You've been sorry your entire life. Now you get to be wrong. Ooh, that sounds like a bundle of joy. So I went home and I made these reparations, and I immediately began to see change. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration, argument, fault fighting. I mean, those are, I even try to use that in my own personal life. Argument, fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, it's a difficult thing to do. Because why? Because selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. So things aren't going to be la-di-da because you came home. I flew home and my dad was like, it's you again. I'm not joking. He gave me a pretty hard time. And he was like, you're doing these meetings things? Very skeptical. My dad to this day does not know what I do in AA or ask or care or any of that. To this day, he just doesn't. It's not a big deal. Because it's my life. It's my responsibility. If persistent in a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. Most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, they may see their own defects. They may not. That says they may, but they may not. And I can tell you, my experience is they may not. Don't be too helpful. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helplessness and friendliness. You know, all I can tell you is my experience is when I'm telling someone else about what it's like to be around them. Just think about that. I tell them when they're going home, it's really strange to be around my family. Really? How strange was it you to bail you out on Christmas? How was that? How about your mom's birthday? Were you there? Was that strange? And now you come home and everything's la-di-da? They've bent over backwards for you, and now you say that you are, you know, on a different basis. They may be a little bit skeptical about that, buddy. I was 2 years sober, and I remember being a little bit butthurt about it for about 5 minutes. I was 2 years sober. I was working the program. I was living on Baldwin. I had a job, management, got promoted, was going to school. My stepmom said, so your dad told me you were going to school and you're doing all these things. And I said, I am. And she goes, I still don't believe you. And I wanted to say, but she has a right. She has a right. And so for me, this is really just to focus on, you know, if I'm taking someone through the steps and he's going home and he's trying to live on a spiritual basis, you know, it's a constant reminder. What's it like to be around you? You're not exactly a bundle of roses. You know, because you start going to some meetings and know some AA lingo and got a sponsor, that doesn't mean jack to your old lady. Not yet. That doesn't prove anything. You know, what's going to prove is my actions. You know, and that takes time to be to rebuild things. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. You know, what one of the biggest things I remember, you know, and is very important, it meant so much to me in my sobriety, is that I went to meetings all the time when I went home in the beginning. And I try to do that when I go home, but quite frankly, I have family that lives in like four different cities. So I go to Baton Rouge, I go to Slidell, I go to Lafayette, and I'll go to Biloxi. And sometimes I don't make a meeting while I'm home. That's just how it is, because I'm trying to see two nephews and a niece and eight cousins and my mom, my stepdad, my dad, and his stepmom. What was really important, what was driven home to me, is that regardless of how they behaved, whether I was going to a meeting or not, I was to demonstrate these principles that I've learned regardless. And that is easier said than done. And I've had some experience. I used to call my sponsor. I was sponsored by Keith for a while. And I remember calling Keith and saying, I'm not doing anything I want to do. I haven't been to a single casino or strip club since I've been here. And he would just laugh at me. And he'd say, that sounds like you're actually acting like a human being. That's a good job. Would you like your gold star now that you're actually acting like a son? And this would offend me, and it would also let me know I'm doing the right thing, because it was actually checking myself. But I'm just concentrating on what I'm doing, not what they're doing. That's it. I don't care if they're doing anything that I think is right or wrong. I'm there to be a son, because I have caused enough havoc and have been a pain in the ass for long enough. And now it's just time to be there and spend time with them and make it about them. That's it. That's how simple it is. And when I focus on that, my experience is that it gets better real quick. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. I probably talk to my mom on almost a daily basis. And not because I'm telling you because I'm tooting my own horn, but because she likes to talk to me. My dad, not so much. I can call him and I keep in touch with him. But my mom likes to hear from me. And that means a lot to her. And the fact that I have a relationship with this woman who I've completely just manipulated and burned these things to the ground, it gives me a basis that when I'm working with another alcoholic and they say, man, you don't understand. Yes, I do. I do understand. And you're going to have to take the lead. And it's going to take time. And they may not believe you. And it doesn't matter what they say. You just have to continue to walk the path. Because if I knew where I would be today, and looking back when I first got sober and how they didn't want to let me in their house, you know, it's a complete 180. And there was nothing that was going to fix it. There was no quick fix. There was not going to be like, all right, he says he's sorry now and he's changed and he's going to meetings. That's not my experience. So I always try to, you know, bring that to someone's attention, you know, especially working with another alcoholic. What's it like when I went home? You know, I always try to think, like, what was it like when I was in their shoes? It was uncomfortable as hell, but I still had to do it. And I still needed the support and the love and the compassion to walk me through those situations. You know, going home sober for the first couple of times was uncomfortable as hell. And it should have been. It should be uncomfortable when I've done things like that. And I reassure my guys, when you're going to make amends to these people and they perhaps slap you in the face or throw something at you or out their office, you're doing pretty good. That's a pretty good amends. Don't feel bad. because it's part of this process is that I had to eat a lot of crow when I came here. Without the help of Alcoholics Anonymous and without the practice of, hey, read this, do this, show up here, do this, do that, do this. I had no idea what I was doing when I came here. Really, I didn't. I just listened to you and I followed directions. When I went home, what it allowed me to do was to be a son. And I didn't even know that's what the whole point was to begin with, is to become something for someone else. I'm in trouble when I get here. And I always try to remember that, you know, when I'm sponsoring someone else. They don't know what the point is quite yet. They're so, the world is upside down and they couldn't possibly understand how their family feels because they're still trying to think about themselves and they're not seeing how this has impacted their life. I remember that. I remember sitting there trying to figure out, what is my mom thinking right now? Don't go there. Don't go there, buddy. Just get to the meeting and go help another alcoholic. That's all I could tell you. You know, what's worked for me is throwing giving my life to Alcoholics Anonymous by sponsoring other people. Helping them walk through this process has in turn made my relationships better. Because I'm not a son. I'm not even worthy of that title. In my opinion, when I took my fourth step, I'm not a good employee. But somehow when I started to do this and put these principles in my life and then started to give it away, everything started to click. Everything. Because then I began to see what it was really about anyway. My whole life I've been trying to take things. You know, and when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm given this brand new life and all of a sudden people around me love me and want to see me do well and I'm watching and helping other people recover. Wow, that's crazy. And in turn, my life goes smooth and even when I do it. When I do it. Emphasis on when I do that. And to the extent that I do that and put my attention to someone else is the extent that I have peace in my life. So I try to do that as much as possible. I couldn't possibly give back what AA has given me. It's given me my family back. I can't tell you some of the things that have occurred I was never around. I didn't know who my family even was when I came into AA. Seriously, I didn't know who my cousins were, my blood. I didn't know where my sister was. I didn't know lots of things that were going on in my family's life because I was so consumed with myself. You know, so it is a miracle that not only is that not going on in my life, but I actually have something to give someone else to help them through the same situation. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I haven't shown up drunk anywhere in 28 or so years, and I've got a little sister. I think if I did walk through the door drunk, she'd be like, yeah, that's about right. she's still got her eye on me. I love that on the domestic problem, the best we can hope for is just strained relations. You know, we are like the tornado roaring through the lives of others and thinking of only of ourselves and whatever. You know, that door needed to come down anyway. yeah, I'm a maniac when I'm drinking. I'm like Bobby. I got sober young. By the time when I got sober, I had pushed everyone away. I was still welcome in my mother's house. I still was employed. I still had a place to roll up to point to a job. But I had pushed everyone away. I didn't have a roommate. I reduced my life to working, and drinking, and I'm too much of a pussy to live under a bridge. So I would do whatever I had to do to show up and get the job so I could have a roof. I don't know about anybody else. I've got a twisted admiration for people that are willing to just take it to the wire like that. I have a respect for somebody who's just willing to just give it up to the point where I'm outdoors, bro. You know? That's probably not a sane thought. So anyway, I've experienced a lot of these strained relations in untreated alcoholism in sobriety. I know what it's like to be burdened with the gift of insight, where I have the crystal clear ability to see just exactly what you're doing wrong. I know how the meeting ought to go. I know how the home life ought to go. I know what my kids ought to be doing. Certainly the traffic, you know. Would you commit to the intersection? Come on. I'm going to have to wait another light cycle for you to make the left. I know stuff. And I have to tell you about it. I have to. So now we're married, and I get to tell you all the ways. You know, if you criticize me, I will defend myself, right? But then when I criticize you, I get irritated that you're defending yourself. So I'm supposed to contribute to an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness somehow. I'm supposed to remember that I'm the fly in the ointment. That I'm the sick one, I'm the tornado, that all you guys are fine. You're just fine. Everything is fine. I'm not fine. When I'm able to do that, when I'm able to turn my thoughts and attention to how I can contribute, how I can serve, that's really what I'm here to do, then everything goes really smoothly. You don't need my help, you don't need my criticism, you don't need my coaching. If you want my opinion, you'll ask for it. I had a sponsor tell me that. Anybody wants your opinion, David, they'll ask. I'm still waiting, you know? But occasionally somebody says, hey, can I get your thoughts on something? It's like the angels sing, you know? Oh, buddy, you have come to the right place. I don't need to know to have an answer, you know? But people aren't doing that a lot. Most of the time, people just want to talk about what's going on with them. And I get to talk about what's going on with me, or if I can relate to it, I have experience with that. I can tell you that this atmosphere in my own home today, this atmosphere is normally helpful and friendly among the people that live under that roof. Because of 12 Steps and Alcoholics Anonymous and the ability to be wrong, my children were raised by a man who was able to say something that I never heard my father say. Daddy was wrong. You yelled at me. You get mad at me for yelling, and you yelled at me. I'm like, I know. That was wrong. Daddy was wrong to yell. Daddy was frustrated. He was wrong. When you live in that atmosphere and you claim your own stuff long enough, every once in a while, people will admit they're wrong without you even pointing it out to them. All three of my kids will say, that was my fault. my bad, I did that, you know, unprompted. Every now and again, my wife will say, I don't know what I was thinking. I was just a little selfish. I was just a little afraid. And I took it out on you. Like once a year. So you don't walk around expecting that stuff. But they don't have sponsors and they don't have a book, you know? Maybe they naturally are able to do it, but I know that they have witnessed me being wrong. You know, I was upset, I was afraid, I was worried, I spoke out of turn, I was snappy. I was wrong. There's so much freedom in being wrong. You know, when people come up and they're just like, and you're like, yeah, I messed that all up, my fault. It's like they're disappointed. They're not gonna have a good, juicy fight, you know? Like, yeah, I was wrong. It takes all the air out of all of it. And the truth is, I am wrong. And we're all just so resistant to it. I'll tell this and shut up. I don't even know if it's important, but hopefully it'll help somebody. But I was at a service committee meeting recently, and one of the service committee members raised their hand and said, could we get copies of the checking account bank statements to look at next month? Now, the only answer to that question would be, of course, I'll bring them next month, or I could email you a PDF of them. They're bank statements. They're your bank statements. It did not go that way. It was like, why do you want them? I mean, here's all the reasons you don't need them. And I mean, all this defensive, just immediately, one simple request, immediately defensive. And that's me. You ask me a question, and on a bad day, I know it's an attack. And if I'm attacked, I will defend. So, little by slowly, when we practice these things on a daily basis, I don't scare so easy. I'm not living in fear. And if I'm aware of being of love and service to you, then a lot of this stuff doesn't even pop up, you know? So I don't feel under pressure or under attack, and therefore I don't have to defend. I can just look for ways to be of love and service to you. And those are good days. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, thank you guys for sharing your experience with us this evening. I'm now going to pass the 7 tradition basket.
We need to give you your own hour.
And read the 7 tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group rent and other expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Steve Rocha, and I'm an alcoholic.
Steve!
Tomorrow night at the International Speaker Meeting, which meets at Glebe Episcopal Church in Suffolk at 8 p.m., our speaker is going to be Jerome B. And also, the last Wednesday of this month, the Suffolk Southside Group celebrated 34 years, and Bob Edwards is going to be a speaker. It's going to be an evening meeting. It starts at 6:30.
Sweet.
Anybody else? All right. This group, Simple Actions, will be having our supper and a speaker next week. 6 p.m. potluck, 7 p.m. speaker meeting. We're having Chris R., from Ingram, Texas. Please come out and join us. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? And you folks, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you? Would like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Rock. I'm
not
Paul.
Rock, welcome.
My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic, Matt.
Hey Chris, welcome.
Welcome.
Chris,
welcome.
Hey Christine,
welcome.
All right, we have literature available on the table over there. The pamphlets and such are free for the taking. If you'd like, the books are for sale. See myself or any home group member if you'd like one of those. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk. And just a reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. So thank you again. Yes? What?
Thank you. Just thank you. Just real quick, there's blue flyer. These blue flyers for next week's event are up on the table there and up on this table. They're not going to do any good in the closet this week. So if everybody, home group members, anybody else, take them out of here, distribute them. Thank you.
All right. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, just down the street on Colonial, right before 22nd. Can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
My name is BJ, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen.
All right. Thank you. Let's close with a word of prayer.